Good morning, everybody. Before we make a start, could I just ask you please to make sure mobiles, BlackBerries and all other devices are turned off? Thank you. This is the last time that I shall stand up before you on one of these results days, and that is basically because we've made very good progress now in normalising the governance arrangements for the group, and that means, and you will have no doubt seen that last week at an extraordinary general meeting, the shareholders voted in favour of changing the articles, which allows us to effect the governance changes that we announced back through October and August. And that means that at the conclusion of the AGM on the 16th of May, I shall stand down as chairman, and Simalka Williamson, who's sitting right here, will take over from me. Two things to say before we get into the meat of the presentation this morning. I think the first is that you will see that there is a huge amount of very good progress that's been made operationally, particularly within the UK business. I think we'll concentrate management a lot more, as it were, on international and the need for some turnaround there, but very good progress in the UK. And the second thing is to reiterate a comment that I made back in August, which is this company is still very much about extracting value for shareholders, are extracting cash and returning that value back to the shareholders. So that strategic principle still sits embedded within the company. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Andy, and he will talk about some of those operational improvements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning. Mike's covered the governance changes, the fact that we're now normalised the governance structure and that's all complete and done, and that we're pursuing an organic strategy. Our focus is on the delivery of our strategy quarter by quarter. There are three key messages I want you to take away today. Firstly, our strategic outlook is attractive. We have scale businesses with competitive advantage, well placed for the key market trends. And this is driving delivery of our financial priorities, giving us the second key message, that our dividend is clearly sustainable from cash generation today. And the third, that we're delivering strong growth in profitable new business, giving cash generation tomorrow. My presentation will focus on these three areas. And I'll start with our headline results. In summary, in the UK, I'm pleased that we're delivering a strong turnaround in underlying operating performance. In international, our strategic review identified some significant issues, and back in November, I was disappointed to give you the guidance of the impact. However, I'm pleased with progress since then. We are now confident we have got to the bottom of these issues, and we've taken the tough, necessary action to deliver the market exits within the guidance we gave in November, including the decision to exit manufacturing in Germany with associated exit costs. So the headline numbers. In terms of cash and capital, sustainable free surplus is £300 million in excess of the cost of dividend. This is driven by run rate cost savings increased to £86 million and underpinned by a strong capital base. In terms of profitable new business, the UK value of new business has more than doubled. We've had an excellent fourth quarter in Lombard, and Friends Provident International is consistent with what we indicated last November. In terms of earnings, we've made good progress in underlying operating profit before the international strategy review impact, with double-digit growth in both IFRS and MCEV profits. And all of that drives the full-year dividend up 6.3%, which is 117% covered by the normal dividends upstream from the life companies to the resolution holding company. Our confidence in the dividend is underlined by our decision to discontinue the scrip. Tim will cover the financials in more detail shortly. I want to focus on the three key messages I just mentioned. And the first of those is that our strategic outlook is attractive. We have scale businesses with competitive advantage, set to take full advantage of the key market trends. So let me cover the key trends and how our strategy of selective participation sets us up for success. The first key trend is that there is substantial embedded value in closed products in the UK. This needs dedicated, skilled management, and we're unique. No other company has a dedicated commercial heritage management team focused on backbook initiatives to turn this embedded value into cash. And we have scale here, with $69 billion of assets under management. In the broader UK market, the key trends are the defined benefit to defined contribution shift, automatic enrolment, and an ageing population with reducing state support. Our strategy, originally set out by Roll in February 2011 and built on by the Friends Life team in November 2011, demonstrates we're on top of these key trends. We have selective participation in three areas. Corporate benefits, where we're number two, with $18 billion of assets. Retirement income, with strong potential from our maturing pensions base. And protection, where we're number four, with 2 million customers. And then in international, the key trend from our perspective is the strong growth in global wealth, particularly in Asia. Again, our strategy responds to this trend, with Friends Provident International as a top three player in the Asian domestic affluent and global expat markets through IFAs, with $6 billion of assets. And Lombard as the market leader in ultra-high net worth estate and succession planning in Europe, with €23 billion of assets. I believe we've built a strong management team, and they in turn are building scale businesses with competitive advantage, well placed for these key market trends. The other two key messages are that we have a sustainable dividend from cash generation today, and that we're delivering strong growth in profitable new business, growing cash generation tomorrow, both driven by the execution of the strategy as I just outlined. These are two of the three financial priorities we've previously set out. The only reason I don't have capital as a key message is that it's clear that our capital base is strong and low risk, so I need say no more. At the simplest level, cash generation today, right in the middle of the slide here, is in-force cash less investment in new business. Tim will cover the annual undiscounted in-force runoff from our UK and Heritage divisions, which is largely driven by the slow runoff in Heritage. At a headline level, our in-force cash today after debt cost is very roughly £600 million per annum. We only distribute about half of that as our dividend, so clearly our dividend is secure and sustainable. And the reason it's sustainable is that the other element of cash generation today is investment in new business, which is very much in our control. It's currently very roughly £300 million, hence sustainable free surplus is £300 million overall. So, in UK and international, the bottom part of the slide here, we're seeking to continue the strong progress in reducing investment in new business and hence increase cash generation today and, at the same time, drive further growth in profitable new business, cash tomorrow, our goal being initially to replace the slow runoff of in-force and then grow it overall. And this slide sets out the agenda for the rest of what I want to cover. I'll start by talking about cash generation today and how Heritage is driving that, and then move on to profitable new business and how UK and international are driving that. And as I talk about each of our businesses, I'll expand on the strategic outlook and key market trends and how our strong delivery in 2012 is building clear competitive advantage, so we will be winners as those market trends play out and hence drive the delivery of cash generation today and growth in profitable new business. So cash generation today. Sustainable free surplus has improved significantly from the 2010 baseline. Key drivers are substantial cost reductions together with further reductions in new business strain. We focus on both underlying sustainable free surplus generation within the life companies and the actual cash dividends from the life companies to the holding companies. So I've already said that our shareholder dividend is well covered by the normal dividends from the life companies. I'm also pleased that sustainable free surplus within the life companies at £300 million in 2012 is greater than the cost of dividend in 2012. What I'm particularly pleased about is the progress we've made in reducing the other uses of cash generation. We refinanced the AXA deferred consideration notes with an Asian debt issue, removing the need to repay $60 million of principal each year. And the governance changes mean that we can significantly reduce the resolution corporate costs going forward. Now, the majority of our in-force cash generation comes from our heritage division. Let's focus on what we delivered there in 2012. The strategic outlook is that there's substantial embedded value in closed products that needs active, skilled management. We're in an excellent position with scale at $69 billion of assets under management, and more importantly, with a dedicated, highly skilled heritage division focused on turning embedded value into cash, a unique structure for UK life companies that are open to new business. Our heritage strategy is to focus on cost efficiency, building asset management, and capital optimization. In 2012, we made good progress on delivering our cost savings, including the Diligenta outsource, which makes those costs variable. We are confident that our target of $160 million will be either delivered or contractually secured by the end of this year. That's one third out of UK operating costs, and it's a key driver of the sustainable free surplus improvements we've just seen. We launched our new asset manager, Friends Life Investments, which already has $11 billion of assets under management and expect a further $7 billion this year. And we've built a significant capability in capital optimization, which is delivering a strong track record of additional free surplus generation, with more to go at as we further reduce the number of life companies, restructure our various with-profit funds, and I'm sure a few other ideas that Jonathan Moss and his team will come up with. Overall, our heritage strategy is delivering strongly, which gives us confidence on future in-force cash generation. The key challenge from here is to ensure we further reduce investment in new business, while at the same time further growing profitable new business, our goal being that future cash generation from new business initially replaces the runoff of the in-force cash and then grows it overall. So let's move on to that. I'm very pleased with the excellent progress we've made in the UK division in 2012. Our UK strategy is to focus on attractive markets, benefiting from the key market trends where we have sustainable competitive advantage and can deliver cash and returns to shareholders. That means exiting unprofitable markets, ensuring no cross-subsidies, and moving closed products to heritage. Our focus in 2012 has been building that competitive advantage in three key areas: strong profitable propositions, migration to efficient platforms, and strong distribution franchises. The success of this is evidenced by the results that David Hynam and his team have delivered. Value of new business more than doubled. New business strain more than halved. We invest less in new business, improving cash generation today, and get much more value of new business for it, improving cash tomorrow. Exactly what I've already said is our key goal. While there's more to do for the longer term, we are confident of delivering our 2013 value of new business targets and have already exceeded the 2013 new business strain reduction target a year early. I'll now cover each UK business, setting out the key strategic trends and how executing on our strategy is both driving the numbers and building advantaged competitive positions for future profitable growth. So in protection, the margins are good, and there's some impetus from RDR, especially given 70% of the UK population have no life cover. We've also had gender-neutral pricing, which generally led to some of January's business being brought forward to December. Our strategic positioning is as a top four player focused on the profitable critical illness and income protection segments. And our strategy is to establish competitive advantage in three areas: high quality propositions, cost efficient platforms, and partnership distribution. So in 2012, our investment in propositions led to a series of awards and underpinned the more than threefold increase in value of new business. That was achieved with 80% of our business on our target platform. We completed the migration to the target platform in December, So that's 100% of our business is on this target platform from the start of this year, a platform with market-leading cost efficiency. And you can clearly see the benefit of our strategy here in the numbers. I committed to migrate to the target platform, and we've delivered that. And I committed that this would lead to strong growth in value of new business, and we've delivered that too. And we've also made good progress in building partnership distribution, migrating our existing partners and winning new deals. In particular, I believe we're building a scale business with sustainable competitive advantage, and hence I'm confident of delivery of our 2013 targets. Moving on to corporate benefits. In terms of the market outlook, we expect strong growth fueled by the move from defined benefit to defined contribution and automatic enrolment. And RDR is very positive for us, both in terms of reducing churn, but also opening up a broader market opportunity, as in my opinion, the key place where mass market consumers will meet their financial needs going forward will be through the worksite. Margins are tight in this market, so scale and cost efficiency are critical, and our strategic positioning is excellent as a number two player with 18 billion of assets under management in our corporate benefits business. Our strategy is building competitive advantage in three areas. So in 2012, we made a significant investment in our My Money platform, and for the sixth year in a row, won the Pensions Gold Standard Award. I'm confident we can compete with the very best in this market, as evidenced by our good growth in assets under management, driven by a 22% increase in sales, in turn driving the 40% increase in value of new business. We've made further good progress on cost efficiency, with 80% of assets now on our target platform, independently verified as competitive with best in market, and a significant reduction in sales and marketing costs. Finally, in 2012, our focus has been getting very well set for automatic enrolment. While we've won new mandates, and the pipeline of these for H2 of this year is good, generally pricing in H2 of last year was unattractive, as some players went for volume. So our disciplined focus has been on the more attractive auto-enrolment opportunity. I'm delighted over 60% of our existing clients have decided to auto-enrol with Friends Life, with half of the rest going to Nest, giving us substantial new members on top of the over 1 million members we currently have. This is critical, as our costs are largely fixed or scheme-related, so our profitability is highly geared to volumes. For 2013, the delays across the market in the timing of auto-enrolment, together with our pipeline of new mandates landing more in H2, mean that volumes and new business profits will be weaker in H1. However, I'm confident of significant volume and profit growth in 2013 as a whole. Corporate benefits is an asset business. Looking to the longer term, our strong proposition is already driving good growth in assets, which will be further fueled by auto-enrolment. When you couple this with improving cost efficiency, I'm confident about our future prospects here. Finally, retirement income. The market outlook here is very positive. High growth fueled by an aging population and growing defined contribution assets. We expect this market to grow from about 14 billion last year to approaching 50 billion by the end of this decade. This is the largest and fastest growing profit pool in the UK. The strength of our strategic positioning in this market is that we have 2 billion per annum of maturing pension monies, 11% of the total market, and yet we only retain a quarter when our better peers retain well over half. Again, our strategy is focused on three areas. In 2012, we developed our enhanced annuity, which directly addresses the major reason why customers were buying an external annuity. This is evidenced by the successful pilot where retention increased to over 60%. Overall, sales are up 38% and value of new business up 84%, already exceeding our 2013 market target a year early. I'm also pleased with the progress we've made in building our capability, both on risk pricing and investment, the latter giving us additional yield to improve customer pricing. Finally, our brand new online telephony and customer support centre, including a new specialist team of 40 people in Dorking, is working specifically to improve customer engagement. and we built the key capabilities required to enter the open market for annuities. Our approach here has very consciously piloted and tested initiatives rather than seek rapid short-term volume growth, and our pricing has been prudent as we've built capability. We are now ready to scale up these initiatives, and given the drive to transparency in annuities, these actions leave us well placed, both for that going forward and for strong, profitable growth in volumes. We expect margins to be strong going forward, but not at the exceptional levels of 2012. So that's our UK division. When I joined the group in mid-2011, my initial focus was on the Heritage and UK divisions, where we set out a clear strategy in November 2011, focusing where we can build sustainable competitive advantage. While there's more to do, I'm pleased with our execution and delivery so far. Moving on to international, we're now bringing that same focus here. We will focus on operating in attractive growth markets where we have competitive advantage and can deliver cash and returns, but unlike the UK, not by competing head-on with the major players. The international strategy review therefore rebalanced value, volume, and risk, and has two core elements going forward: Lombard, focused on ultra-high net worth estate and succession planning, and Friends Provident International, focused on domestic affluent in Asia and global expats. I will focus on each of these in a few moments. In terms of the areas we're exiting, I am very pleased with the progress we have made since November. I can confirm today that John van der Wielen has been liaising extensively with the Japanese FSA, and our clear intent is to manage our book of Japanese business as a normal, orderly run-off over time. I can also confirm today that we're exiting manufacturing products in Germany. In order to manage the persistency of our existing book and contain the cost of the exit, we've agreed a deal with Cardea for our German broker sales force to sell their products. This will cut over in the middle of this year, so while there'll still be some unprofitable business in the numbers in 2013, we will have completed the exit of this by the end of this year. And finally, we completed the sale of our stake in Am Life in January of this year for £50 million, 130% of embedded value. So the non-core areas are being dealt with, and we're now in a position to successfully complete a full exit within the guidance we gave in November. In terms of the core international businesses going forward, I'm pleased that underlying sustainable free surplus has improved significantly here, and the initiatives we have in train give us confidence to reconfirm our commitment to the international dividend profile going forward. Let's cover each of the core businesses in turn. Firstly, Friends Provident International. In terms of market outlook, no one will question the excellent growth potential for affluent consumers in Asia, and indeed global expats. Our strategic position is consciously focused on a particular niche where we have a significant market share, and our strategy is to develop our propositions to grow assets, reshape the operating model to reduce costs, while continuing to strengthen our distribution franchise. In terms of our propositions, our investment in 2012 means that once again our products are award-winning, while at the same time more capital efficient, and this is driving the 9% growth in assets under management to over £6 billion. The reshaping of our head office led to significant headcount reductions, hence improving our cost efficiency. This will be further underpinned going forward by doing more of the work in Asia and investment in systems. Finally, we have a very strong distribution franchise with IFAs, and now over half of our Asian business is coming from domestic affluent rather than expats. We're adding to this in building our relationships with the bank wealth arms. This is an asset business. The strength of our proposition and distribution franchises will drive good asset growth, and coupled with improved cost efficiency, this gives us confidence in our dividend commitments, particularly as we're already seeing the benefits of this strategy in the core sustainable free surplus numbers for international. And Lombard. In terms of market outlook, wealth in Europe and globally will continue to grow strongly going forward, and hence there'll be growing demand for compliant and secure wealth management and estate planning solutions. Lombard is extremely well placed for this as the European market leader in private bank assurance, and our strategy is focused firstly on propositions, where in 2012, further enhancements have been behind 11% growth in assets under management to over €23 billion. Secondly, on our Head Office 2014 programme, leading to significant reductions in headcount, with further reductions due this year. And finally, on deepening our distribution relationships with European private banks, leading to a pleasing shift in mix towards private banking business. Although this comes at a lower margin, it's also lower risk and much higher growth. Again, this is an asset business, and this strong year of delivery in 2012 leaves us well placed going forward to continue growing assets under management through the strength of our propositions and distributor relationships, coupled again with reducing costs. Hence, as with Friends Provident International, we are confident of the dividends from Lombard. So to summarise, our strategic outlook is very positive. We're playing in the right markets. We have scale businesses with competitive advantage, well placed for the key market trends. And this is driving the delivery of our financial priorities. Our shareholder dividend is sustainable. We only distribute half of our in-force cash generation. And I'm pleased that it is covered by sustainable free surplus in 2012 and well covered by the normal cash dividends upstream from the life companies to the resolution holding company. Our confidence in our dividend is underlined by the decision to discontinue the scrip. And I'm particularly pleased with the strong growth in profitable new business that we've delivered. The strength of our franchises gives me confidence in future profitable growth. And with that, I'll now hand over to Tim, who will cover the financials in more detail, and he'll be followed by Clive, who will sign off on the UK Life project from Roel's perspective. Firstly, Tim.
Well, thank you very much, Andy, and good morning, everyone. As Andy said, 2012 was a year of good operational performance with IFRS profits of £274 million, driven by a strong turnaround and a 51% increase in profits from our UK and Heritage divisions. Our overall results have, however, been affected by the impact of the International Strategic Review, as we said in November. Talking of that review, the necessary adjustments arising from the refocusing of our international businesses have come out at £94 million, which is within the guidance we gave when we met in November. But importantly, this impact now includes the adjustments from the conclusions of our reviews into the German and Japanese businesses, which were ongoing when we last spoke. The IFRS impact is, as predicted, lower at £82 million. In line with the financial disciplines and priorities that we have set out, the group continues to have a robust, low-risk balance sheet, and I'm pleased to confirm the 6.3% increase in the dividend, underpinned by the actions we have taken in 2012 to de-risk group cash flows, and the dividend charge is 117% covered, as Andy said, by our normal dividend upstreaming. The strength of the capital base has allowed us to discontinue the scrip dividend option, but we are introducing a DRIP option for shareholders. This allows transparency and predictability to both our cash flows and our share count. A lot of you have given Andy and me feedback to simplify the results messaging and cut down on metrics. Well, to be frank, that's difficult this time when the results are made up of two very different performances. A strong UK and Heritage performance and poor international results as we deal with the necessary refocusing. So let's see what we have. Well, our published numbers are shown here, starting with SFS of £300 million. When we look at the operating results, it makes sense to remove from 2011 the large benefits relating to the Diligenta outsourcing and PSO 614. Having done that, the revised headline profits show good performance even before I look to adjust for some exceptional items this year, principally, of course, the International Strategic Review impacts. We've also achieved strong cost reduction progress against the raised targets that we set in November, and now have 88% of targeted cost savings secured. Capital strength remains strong, 214% coverage of regulatory requirements. But I'm now going to go straight to the heart of the numbers. look at the international impact and further demonstrate the underlying good performance in 2012. And then I want to get into the drivers of that financial performance. At the International Investor Day in November last year, we highlighted the need to refocus the businesses. As announced, we are exiting Japan, which does not meet our risk appetite, and withdrawing from manufacturing products for Germany. Quite simply, we can't see how we can make adequate returns there. In addition, we're undertaking a major overhaul of the back office operations within Lombard. We guided to a £50 to £100 million reduction in MCV, that being net of about £45 million positive impact in Lombard. With the reviews now completed, we've updated the financial adjustments to reflect a withdrawal from product manufacturing in Germany and a managed runoff of our business written for Japanese nationals. Overall, these impacts amount to £94 million adverse impact to MCV operating profit, which is within our November guidance. In IFRS, the £82 million impact is about 60% of the MCV charge when you exclude the Lombard benefit of £46 million, which, as I said in November, was VIF-related. As we go through the results slides, remember the 94 and the 82 million numbers, and I'm afraid they'll come up a few times. The impacts on SFS from the International Strategic Review are much smaller, with assumption changes from the Strategic Review falling below the line. But these are, however, more than offset by capital releases of £101 million from our capital optimisation programme. When running a large business with policyholder liabilities in excess of £100 million, we're inevitably going to get variances against long-term performance assumptions, both positive and negative. We have to manage these. But having to change actual assumptions should be much rarer. This year, we've achieved assumption change benefits in the UK, which partially offset the adverse impacts of the International Strategic Review. Looking at the underlying performance without these two factors, we see 12% and 11% increases in IFRS and MCV operating profits, respectively. Additionally, it is these underlying profits that I intend to use to assess how our businesses perform in 2013. So now let's look at what has driven our performance and discuss the key drivers. Firstly, let's go through free surplus and cash. We focus on each and every element of sustainable free surplus generation, not just sources and uses within the business, but also the demands placed upon the residual free surplus generated. Our dedicated management team within Heritage are focused on securing the cash flows from the in-force book. This delivers the cash today, as Andy set out earlier. And we make disciplined decisions on the uses of cash that we generate, the biggest of which is investment in new business. This is important, as this will drive future cash emergence, and I will show you in a moment how we are achieving higher returns on new business, while the cost of writing that business is coming down. Debt costs will increase slightly in 2013, but as I explained at our November Investor Day, last year's issue led to a material de-risking of the group's dividend servicing capabilities through our DCN refinancing, and at 22%, our gearing is comfortably low. Let's put numbers on it. Well, as you've heard, 2012 sustainable free surplus is up 3% on last year to £300 million. The result reflects continued strong reductions in investment in new business, partially offset by a slightly lower expected return due to some mildly negative economic impacts and higher development costs. I'll talk about these impacts in a bit more detail later. Overall experience variances and other operating items are not dissimilar to 2011. And relate mainly to some capital and tax efficiencies and some favourable benefits from model refinements in the UK and Heritage divisions. Importantly, these gains have more than absorbed the SFS impact of the International Review. At a divisional level, UK and Heritage together delivered a 13% uplift, driven by these positives and, of course, the reduction in investment new business on the back of continued cost reductions and the migration of business onto target platforms. The SFS contribution from the international division was a negative £28 million. Whilst more than offset by UK positive, it is worth noting that the result includes £21 million from the strategic review directly, relating mainly to the higher cost of German guarantees, as well as one-off restructuring costs of some £12 million. Going forward, as Andy said, we do expect some drag in 2013 as we manage the orderly withdrawal from the non-core markets. Moving on, I said I'd come back to the group expected return from in-force business. Well, looking here at the year-on-year performance in the chart, the expected return in 2012 is slightly lower than last year. This was primarily in international due to higher FinRe repayments, with overall economic impacts being less than £10 million. I've also provided an estimate of the undiscounted free surplus emergence from UK and Heritage using real-world returns. The majority of this surplus generation arises within the Heritage division, but this will increasingly be complemented by additional surpluses generated by the UK business as the size of its in-force business grows. The chart uses start-of-year economic assumptions and suggests only a modest overall economic impact in 2013, as lower rates of return are broadly offset by higher opening equity markets. As you can see from the chart, expected free surplus emergence from the UK and Heritage book is forecast to remain broadly stable over the next couple of years. The goal, of course, is to continue to develop profitable growth within the UK and international businesses to provide the security of cash generation in the longer term. And that's what we're confident of achieving. I've added some comments on the likely headwinds and tailwinds that we face going forwards, although I believe they should broadly offset in 2013. We haven't shown international runoff here, although I do expect a drop in 2013 following lower sales volumes in 2012 in line with the revised strategy. So now it's right to look at the largest use of cash, and that's new business investment. Well, I'm very pleased with the progress that we have made in reducing new business cash strain, which is down 46% in UK and Heritage. And this fully achieves the £200 million reduction target set 2 years ago, and it does it a year ahead of schedule. In contrast, international new business cash strain is up 13% to £123 million, mainly due to the impact of FinRe reserving in the German operations. I've also shown here how we move from new business cash strain to overall investment in new business. While new business cash strain is significantly lower, we don't see the full benefit of this reduction in investment in new business, as we need to put aside some capital as we grow our business. This is particularly true in the UK, reflecting the higher mix of risk rather than savings business. On the right-hand side of the slide, you can clearly see evidence of how our value over volume focus is working. 2012 AP is flat at a group level, but we've delivered a strong 19% growth in the UK division, which is offset by lower sales in Heritage, as we would expect from a runoff business, and also in international, whilst overall VNB is up 28%. Whilst the group IRR has progressed slowly to just 10.4% and has been held back by international, the UK division has improved significantly from 8.4% to 13.3% in 2012. In the UK division, we're making terrific progress towards our 2013 targets, with VNB more than doubled to £142 million, whilst at the same time significantly reducing our cost of writing that business. This is also evident in the marked improvement in new business margins, which have increased from 2.1% in 2011 to 3.8% this year. The corporate benefits VNB target is within sight, while protection VNB grew over threefold following an increased proportion of business being written on the target platforms and a near 50% increase in group protection sales. Pleasingly, retirement income VNB has already exceeded the 2013 target. Overall, we remain confident of exceeding the 2013 VNB target for the UK division. Turning now to the charts on the right. Internal rates of return are significantly stronger. Well, that's the benefit of being on one platform. And stronger in retirement income, where the 2013 target has already been achieved. There is, however, more work to do in corporate benefits, where we expect auto-enrolment-driven volume increases to deliver our VNB targets, and we're working on the actions necessary to improve the IRR target, which have been adversely hit in 2012 by the lower-margin Woolock business acquired in late 2011. Overall, it is pleasing to see the considered actions that we have taken to turn around the UK division are being reflected in the key financial metrics. It is this sort of performance that gives me confidence in delivering the cash tomorrow priority that Andy talked about in his presentation. Well, the UK division is two-thirds of the way through its turnaround and has good momentum. The international transformation has only just begun. In the RNS released this morning, you will find a detailed split of the international business between core and non-core across our key metrics. I've given this so that you have a complete picture of the impacts from the strategic review and an understanding of our core ongoing operations. Within the international division, Lombard has delivered a 7% increase in sales volumes in constant currencies, although margins are down a bit within VMB as we move towards securing more business through private banks rather than IFAs. As we said in November, private bank-driven business is generally more stable and lower risk, albeit margins are finer. The fourth quarter was especially strong for Lombard. The VNB reduction within FPI reflects some of the strategic review impacts that I talked about earlier. And I've broken out the core and non-core splits for 2011 and 2012 respectively, with core FPI value of new business down just £5 million, mainly due to reduced volumes and some increased acquisition costs. We've now rebaselined International's core ongoing operations, which achieved an encouraging 15% IRR in 2012. And we've done this by applying the same financial disciplines that have turned around the UK performance. 2013 is a big year for International as we seek to obtain stronger returns and dividend flows back to the UK. Moving on then to another use of funds, expenses. Well, overall operating costs fell by 3% in 2012. The reduction was primarily driven by UK and Heritage, which I will come on to in a moment, and a 34% cut in corporate costs, partially offset by an increase in International. However, excluding strategic review execution costs, International operating expenses were down 2%. Development spend has increased to £50 million, and the whole increase is in UK and Heritage. And the reason for this significant uplift is the increased investment in the UK division's annuity strategy, development of the corporate platform, and a number of necessary product and system changes to meet new regulatory requirements driven by the retail distribution review, gender-neutral pricing and auto-enrollment, for example. Looking forwards, I would expect development costs to remain high in 2013. Looking more closely at the movement in the UK and Heritage cost base, like-for-like operating expenses were down 6% on last year. As you can see from the right-hand chart, I am very pleased with the progress that we've made on cost reduction. We've now delivered £86 million of run rate savings and have a further £54 million of contractualised savings to come. The run rate uplift in 2013 will be delivered through £20 million of secured savings, while the rest have been fully embedded in our detailed 2013 budgets. The uplift in run rate savings from 2013 to 2015 will be realised solely through contractualised savings. Let's move on to our other key reporting base, IFRS. Well, this is a similar slide to the one I showed earlier, although this focuses on IFRS rather than sustainable free surplus. The overall concepts underpinning the two bases are similar, but there are a number of adjustments for items such as deferred acquisition costs, tax, and certain accounting adjustments. Let's look at the numbers and then review the main drivers. The group result in 2012 was a profit of £274 million, and comparing this with 2011 is difficult, as last year included the £404 million benefit from the implementation of PSO 614 and the Diligenta outsourcing. A strong reduction in new business strain and reduced corporate costs were offset by a lower in-force surplus at £550 million, higher development spend, as we just saw, and negative principal reserving changes and one-offs, the latter of which in 2012 reflects the impacts of the International Strategic Review, partially offset by some positive reserving changes in UK and Heritage. At a divisional level, and removing last year's one-off items, and by last year I mean 2011, UK and Heritage increased strongly to £283 million. This was largely a result of the drivers that I've just spoken about, most notably the significantly reduced new business strain. To be totally transparent, though, the result also includes £47 million of positive reserving changes that I called out when we looked at underlying results earlier. The International division result is poor, but reflects the full impact from the strategic review of £82 million that we saw earlier. the international component of the overall in-force surplus also bears the cost of doing and executing the reviews in Lombard and FPI. These impacts are more clearly visible on the next slide as a reduction in in-force surplus alongside the setup costs for Friends Life Investments, or FLI, giving a total reduction here on this line item of £22 million. Other impacts offset each other. I've shown in the pie chart a breakdown of the sources of in-force surplus. Unit-linked business makes up about 60% of the total, and as we all know, this is clearly sensitive to investment market movements, with actual AMCs earned reflected in operating profit. Approximately three-quarters of the unit-linked assets relate to equities, with the remainder mostly in government and corporate bonds, cash and property. Overall unit-linked funds under management for the group increased 4% to £77 billion, with strong growth in corporate benefits and international, partially offset by the fully expected net outflows in heritage. The risk margin element relates to our protection and annuity products and represents expected profits, plus any differences to our long-term assumptions. As within free surplus, finance costs within IFRS will rise in 2013. The uplift here is, however, higher, as IFRS uses market values of debt to calculate interest charges rather than the actual cash expense as used in sustainable free surplus. Looking beyond the operating result, I've set out here the full reconciliation to the IFRS statutory result. We're a group brought together by acquisitions, so we have the unusual, but recurring for us, acquisition accounting adjustments, without which our profits would, of course, have been healthy, with investment fluctuations offsetting non-recurring costs. Non-recurring spend is broken out on the right-hand side. As I've mentioned previously, I acknowledge that the costs associated with some of these programs are indeed significant. But these are the necessary investments to ensure the turnaround of the legacy underinvested in businesses. As Andy said, we're creating a great business, one which is very different from the original ones purchased, and you can see the turnaround coming through in the operating results in 2012. Let's also remember that the cash cost of future non-recurring spend is fully set aside within our working capital provisions. To complete the picture, let's turn briefly to MCEV. Well, similar to IFRS, when we set aside the positive assumption changes in 2011, this year's operating profit of £382 million is broadly flat on 2011. This was driven by significantly improved levels of VNB, offset by higher development spend, some negative experience variances and some modest but negative operating assumption changes. 2012 experience variances include the £16 million of costs actually executing the international strategic review. At a divisional level and removing 2011 one-offs, UK and Heritage operating profits increased 39% to £502 million. This was driven by a strong increase in VNB that we saw earlier, and also, to be fair, the positive £62 million of assumption changes, which you saw earlier when I discussed underlying performance. The International Division £1 million operating profit contribution is, of course, after the negative £94 million strategic review impact that we saw earlier, as well as the review delivery costs. While frustrating for this year, it does show the robustness of that division for the future. Disappointingly, return on embedded value has fallen from 6.5% to 5.1% in 2012. Clearly, there are some one-offs in each year which make a sensible comparison difficult. But let's be frank, this is still a long way from our target. Nevertheless, we are taking the right actions to improve returns, driving costs down, reducing new business strain while driving profitability up and making financially disciplined decisions. Overall, the embedded value of the business increased to just over £6 billion before the return of cash to shareholders. This result reflects the operating profit contribution of the business and positive economic variances, partially offset by tax and non-operating items. Now let's move on to capital, and in particular the IGCA surplus position. Well, as promised, we continue to maintain a strong capital base with the IGCA surplus at £2 billion and a coverage ratio of 214%. IGCA remains the biting constraint, but remains resilient to market movements. Post the simplification of the governance structure, we will report a group IGCA position, including the resolution holding company's net assets. On a pro forma basis, this would amount to about £2.2 billion surplus and a corresponding coverage ratio of over 220%. Year-end available shareholder cash is £850 million, broadly the same as last year, but includes the cash for the final dividend, which we have proposed but obviously not yet paid. The economic capital surplus position is about £3.4 billion and is thus well in excess of the IGCA position. For the markets in which we operate and our current position and expectations for growth in our carefully selected target markets, this is a strong capital base within a low-risk balance sheet. Talking of which, the vast majority of our balance sheet is, of course, represented by the funds that we manage on behalf of our customers and includes £28 billion of with-profit funds and £77 billion of unit-linked funds. I've broken out here quite a lot of detail on our shareholder assets. The core part is invested assets of £15 billion, of which £3 billion is in cash, a further £3 billion is in government bonds, and the remaining £9 billion is in corporate bonds. Despite being 97% investment grade, we retain over £500 million of default reserves against our bond holdings, which is equivalent to a 43% haircut as a percentage of the spread. So overall, we are pleased with the progress that we are making. We remain on track to achieve those targets with a 2013 delivery date. Our progress towards them shows that the tough decisions taken in the UK over the last 18 months, and more recently in international, were the right ones, and are transforming our legacy businesses into a group that generates sustainable returns for shareholders. I referred at the start to your feedback to us for fewer metrics. Well, as we knock these off as achieved, we can deliver on that request as well. Two down and many more to achieve in 2013. And so in summary, in 2012 we increased sustainable free surplus, we achieved a significant hike in UK profitability despite investing materially less cash in new business. The balance sheet is low risk, and once again the dividend is more than covered by cash upstreamed from the life businesses. With the UK transformation two-thirds done and international's turnaround underway, we have much to do but much to look forward to. And with that, I will hand you over to Clive.
Thank you, Tim. Well, good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased today to be here to just place today's results in the context of the journey we've been on in the last few years. Let me take you back for a second, if I can, to the slide that we showed you. See if I've messed up the system here. Just 2 years ago, pretty well today, it was the end of February 2011, we were in the immediate aftermath of announcing and then completing at the end of 2010 the AXA transaction, where we bought the whole of the, almost the entire assets of the UK life business of the AXA group. We placed that next to Friends Provident and a small acquisition, Bupa, and we stood back and said, well, what have we got today and what might the next 2 or 3 years hold ahead of us. We put this slide up in February 2011 and said, here's the journey as we saw it for the next 2 to 3 years. First of all, we saw a need to establish robust governance and management. Friends Provident had been acquired as a struggling listed life insurer. AXA had been the UK subsidiary of a large international parent, and therefore its management team and governance and board structures didn't necessarily reflect what would be needed to return an enlarged entity to the UK public markets. And so the first thing we needed to do was to focus on that board and management issue. The second thing is the market strategy in which those companies had pursued up to that date had been very, very much growth-led. There'd been companies that had prioritized growth over dividend. Indeed, the AXA Group not being the UK part of AXA, not having made huge returns to the parent company for several years. And therefore, that needed to be turned around and that whole focus of pursuing embedded value growth over cash return needed to be reviewed. We also had a number of international assets that needed review, and you've heard today where we are on that journey. Third, we saw the need for the operating model to be right-sized or aligned with the product strategy and market strategy that we'd chosen. And the early decision to pull out of UK savings, rather, of individual savings from both those companies was an early part of that, and to move towards a large-scale outsourcing that you've seen announced last year. And then finally, we needed to switch around the financial targets so that they reflected this concept of cash return. Our view 2 years ago was certainly that in addition to the need to focus on growing and building a dividend stream that could be relied upon by the market, there would be the opportunity, particularly in the context of the inherited estate that we'd acquired from AXA, to also make some to make some special dividends. As you know, we've made one of those, and we're unable to complete the second one prudently last year. So, stepping back from all those things and looking at today's results in the context of those plans 2 years ago, you can see why we're pleased and very proud to be here today with the management team and board and governance structure that we now have, a team that we went out specifically to find, a team that we found and recruited in with great depth of experience from the UK life market, but that experience having led the individuals to a careful, healthy scepticism of some of the claims made in our industry over the last 20 years. And that healthy scepticism allowed us to believe that we could rely on a team that would not just focus on cash, would write new business where it was possible to make the right and required return from that, but would not fall for some of the dreams, hopes, and aspirations that have dominated the UK life market over the last 10 or 15 years and have led so much money to be poured away pursuing distribution strategies or product strategies that haven't added to eventual cash emergence. And so we started with that team as the first and most important thing to do. Indeed, it was about 2 or 3 months after the putting up of this slide that we announced that Andy was be joining us, and then Andy has worked to fill out that team with the addition of Tim, Rosie, and others that have come into the company, including Jonathan Moss and other people, with the focus on the extraction of value from these assets. Secondly, the market strategy. You've heard Andy set it out explicitly clearly today. There are a number of market drivers. Those drivers are what we focus on. We pull the big levers. We don't worry too much about the small movements from market or product sector to product sector, but those big areas that we focused on in terms of the big drivers of cash emergence from back books and a huge wall of money that we do expect to see in terms of the shift towards retirement savings, but coherently and corporately acquired rather than chasing individual sales is the proposition that we're pursuing. The product strategy then gave birth to the operating strategy that you've seen. Again, Andy gave more details on today. The unexpected jewel in all of that was Bupa, actually. A very small transaction in the middle of all this, but which gave us an operating platform with a real scale advantage and price advantage in the term market. Who knew when we did an acquisition that we saw as a product fill-in and indeed a small piece of neat financial use of our internal capital that it would bring the day one or the starting platform for the term and protection business that Andy and the team are building here today. And finally, increasing cash returns with the dividend being the focus of everything we want you to think about as you look at the stock today. So very pleased and very proud to have got to where we wanted on the right, which is a sustainable business focused on cash. No change in that strategy, and that's another message that you've heard Mike, Andy, Tim, and myself reiterate today. No change in that strategy. The market needs sustainable businesses focused on cash. So where are we in the journey that we kicked off at that point? Well, we started, as you know, with three phases. We had, this is also from 2011, an M&A phase where we saw the ability to buy well. We bought both AXA and Friends at prices which are just, thank God, beginning to look cheap as the market's re-rated up as we go forward. We then moved into what's been that 2 year of optimizing the business model, the middle phase. This was the most challenging for us. Less in terms of the levers that needed to pull. The Resolution team had great experience of putting together life insurance businesses for the past. More frankly, from the noise that comes from that when trying to do these two things. A, in the light and glare of public market focus. But secondly, actually, in the context that, in retrospect, we should have been clearer as we move from phase one to two to remove the expectation that further M&A lay ahead. And it was that uncertainty, I think, the fact that M&A may still be ahead and that we may have another transaction still to be done during that middle phase. That, as I look back on, and I regret that we didn't make it clearer earlier as we were in the optimizing phase that M&A was unlikely as we saw the market change. And third and finally, where we've arrived today. And that is in the value delivery phase. And you've heard that delivery from Andy and Tim today, and you can confidently expect to see it as we go forward into the future. So, in summary, where are we? Well, we have a UK life market, which this results season has shown still has variable outcomes and results for investors, but undoubtedly has got a better focus on cash and capital accountability than when we started this project. Indeed, if I think back to the fact that this month is also 10 years since Resolution began its activities in the UK life insurance sector, so March 2003, and compare where we are today to where we were 10 years ago, where the only metric anyone ever reported was embedded value new business earnings, and you might get a small line at the bottom of somebody's results regarding what had happened to the back book. There's been a complete turnaround in that 10-year period. It's a turnaround that we've been pleased to be part of. We're also seeing a defined, and I'm afraid to say, smaller new business profit pool. That's the realistic basis against which people need to plan their activities. The life insurance industry has had several decades of importance in the life and of British society, but it's now, because of the arrival of other investment media, mutual funds, and other ways in which people can invest, needing to sharpen its game, frankly, because it needs to compete in a reduced a new business pool, and that for the need for having very precise offerings in the way that Andy described today, and not seeking to compete across the waterfront, seems the only rational response to that. But thirdly, back books now recognised as an asset class. And again, going back 10 years ago, certainly that was not the case. The concept was novel, that by focusing on the back book, you could make sure you'd locked like a laser onto where the cash would eventually come from and be paid out to investors. That several decades of capital moving into the sector needed to be followed by the next two or three decades of capital being on a gentle return phase back to investors. Resolution is operating well as we look at the company today. The experienced team is in place. We do now have the normalised structure where the temporary period of external project-based delivery has now been folded into the standalone entity that is Resolution Limited today. And as you've seen from Andy today, good delivery against those targets set out 2 years ago. And so the sponsor of the company, Resolution Group, the board and the management do remain fully in line in the way that Mike described right at the start of today on the company's strategy and focus. We've retained our focus on cash and capital. It goes right through the heart of the company. We will write new business where profitable, and we remain very realistic and hard-headed about asking where those profits will come from. And we remain also very focused to securing maximum value from each part of the group. So we've reached this stage in the project's life. We have a management team that I'm certainly very pleased and proud to be supportive of. And this is the company, this is the team, and I commend it to you. Back to Mike.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Clyde. That takes us on to questions and answers. Could I ask you to state your name and company as you ask your question? Gentleman there.
Thanks. It's Gordon Aitken from RBC. A couple of questions, please. You identified three markets in the UK some time ago that you would play, and there's obviously been some major external changes since you made that announcement, so auto enrollment, RDR. There's now a review into the annuity market. You've also had some major internal changes, so the structure of the company's been collapsed, and you've obviously got some key management changes have also been made. I mean, those are all major events. Can you set out why these are still the three areas to grow in? That's the first question. And secondly, you've helpfully, hopefully, very helpfully, split the UK in-force into the expected annual cash flows. Now, the £500 million that you expect in 13, you've set out the headwinds and the tailwinds, but what's the major risk here? Is it equity markets? Is it persistency? And can you give us some idea of sensitivity?
You take the first bit?
Yep, I'll take the first. Thank you, Gordon. We do have a selective participation in the UK part of the group, and that is driven off the back of what we see as the key market trends. So as well as recognising there's significant embedded value in closed product lines that needs active skilled management, and our dedicated heritage division is focused on that, the key trends from a new flow perspective, if you like, in terms of the UK market are defined benefit to defined contribution shifts, automatic enrolment, ageing population, reducing state support. And that's all driving significant assets through the worksite in corporate pensions, and then those assets will need to turn into income and retirement in due course. And that's why we've chosen the markets we're particularly focused on. And I think overall, what we've been doing, in terms of the operating company, has been entirely consistent over the last couple of years in focus on those markets and investing heavily in building capability, and there are significant one-off costs, as you've seen, but that's building the capability within the business that gives us confidence that we've now got scale businesses with decent, strong competitive advantage that are well-placed to take advantage of those market trends. And ultimately, what that will do is it will enable us to invest less in new business because we've got stronger franchises, better competitive advantage, get more new business profit for it, and effectively the goal then is that that future new business profit and the cash tomorrow from that replaces and in time grows the runoff in the in-force that you referred to in your second question. So in a nutshell, that's what we're seeking to do, and we're confident it's delivering well for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Gordon, for the question. On the second part of it, regarding the runoff profile we're given, I'm glad you analysts will find that useful. In terms of the risk to it, the risk will come through in different ways. The biggest single risk, I guess, is around markets, which won't be too surprising, with about 60% of it being driven by the fact that the balance sheet is unit-linked based. The impact would, however, come through in different ways. Within our MCV results, of course, we report the expected return above the line, and that runoff table is driven by the expected returns that we have using the start-of-year economic assumptions. So I think that is reasonably predictable. Any differences to the actual would come through below the line in the economic variances. Different treatment, of course, within IFRS, where the actual AMCs that we would earn will come through in above-the-line performance. And clearly, we've had a very strong start to equity markets in the year that we've all seen. And if that continues, then that would clearly give us a bit of a tailwind as we go into 2013.
Gentleman there.
Thanks very much. It's Blair Stewart from BofA Merrill Lynch. Just one question, really, but I guess a few parts to it on free cash flow generation. You know, we're at 300, and you've got a target of moving to 400. I just wonder if you can comment on three aspects of the possible delta here. Firstly, on costs, you've got 54 million to come through in the coming year. Does that just hit the 300 million, or is that additive to 300 million automatically? New business strain, you're spending an awful lot in international, and you stated you want to get that down. Could you help us scale that opportunity? And thirdly, I think in the past you said that you've got around 2 billion of shareholder assets effectively on deposit. Given the strength of the balance sheet, why are you not investing those more actively, which could provide 40 to 50 million boost? Thanks.
Can correct me. On the three drivers, you're quite right to say there's 54 million of cost numbers to come through. To the extent that those cost reductions come through the acquisition line, then that would benefit the sustainable free surplus because we would see a stronger return from our new business. Some of the benefits will, however, come through in maintenance costs, and to an extent they will be split either from improving the maintenance cost performance against the book, or some of it will be simply managing the cost base down as the heritage book runs off slowly in time. And that, of course, was one of the key goals of undertaking the outsource, was to variabilise a good proportion of the heritage cost base so that we were insulating that business from the natural expense risk that you would otherwise face as the book runs off over time. So you wouldn't see the full benefit in SFS. Some of it would be avoiding potential bad news as your maintenance costs exceeded your maintenance allowances. Minor point, remember also that the cost numbers are going to be pre-tax and SFS is post-tax, so you'd see a further adjustment there. The new business strain in international, yes, it was up last year. It was up primarily due to higher levels of Fin Re reserving. That's relating to the German business. And we've broken out in the RNS today, I think it's on about page 44, details of the core and non-core performance of the businesses across the metrics, including sustainable free surplus there, so you would be able to see a clear indication of the core business's sustainable free surplus that was there in 2012. It was there on Andy's slide as £26 million, which is about £30 million of core in FPIL, and there was a minus four in Lombard, and that shows the cost they undertook in actually doing their strategic review. So we would expect to see an improvement in that area going forward in SFS, generally in international. Third part of your question, yes, look, we spoke about this back in November. I can remember the debate around the investment philosophy for the 2 billion of shareholder assets. I mean, looking out of the window today, the UK economy shows many signs of being better than it was 6 months ago. However, there are, of course, still concerns over some aspects of it and the impact of austerity measures. I think by maintaining the flexibility that we have by investing that in, you know, short bonds and in cash, we're maintaining flexibility. There's not a great deal to go for by playing at duration down the yield curve at the moment. And I think I would rather maintain the flexibility that we have in time than I would see, yes, a greater appetite for the taking of risk and seeking of yield with some of that money. But at the moment, I think our position is we prefer to maintain a very low risk capital base and maintain the flexibility that position gives us for investing longer and perhaps seeking a bit more yield in the future.
Greg.
Good morning, Greg Patterson. Good morning, Greg Patterson, KBW. Is the mic on? Yeah. Just two numbers. We spoke about it before. On the working capital, the 117 million remittance. As I mentioned to you, you've stopped the disclosure of the capital generation smoothing account. I wonder if you could tell us what that is. And the restricted assets element of the working capital. So just two numbers there, please. And there's been a number of commentators telling the market that the regulator under Pillar 2 has started trying to push up the required capital. I was just wondering, have you settled the numbers, the ICA you put in here, is that done and dusted for this year? Or are you still negotiating the ICA level with him, especially given your annuity book? And what do you see the trend going forward in the sort of more onerous Pillar 2? Maybe you want to discuss, inform us what's going on there.
We'll come back.
I'll take the second one first and let Tim take the first one second. We have a very good relationship with our regulator, a continuous ongoing dialogue. The economic capital position we quote is economic capital, so that the full ICA is done later in the year and submitted to the regulator through that process. But we're comfortable with the regulatory relationship and the dialogue we have with them around our robust capital position, including the robust position on a economic capital basis, which obviously, as Tim covered earlier on, is now got a 3.4 billion surplus up from 3 billion at the half year.
I'll take the bit on working capital. The working capital provisions that we maintain at the end of the year are about £470 million. The two largest elements of that are £170 million that's put aside for debt servicing costs, for 1 year's debt servicing costs, and £150 million is put aside for future non-recurring costs, net of some modest benefits that we expect from those programmes. That leaves you with about £150 million, which covers restricted assets, a relatively modest amount, Greg. The majority of the remainder is therefore for the smoothing, but you're quite right, I haven't split those two numbers out this time.
Greg.
Just add a quick comment. So just to be clear on this, we've got the sustainable free surplus that we generate within the life companies, and then we have the working capital over here on the side, which covers the non-sustainable elements of free surplus, together with the gap up to the £350 million dividend that each year we pay out of the life companies up to the holding companies. So we talk about the 117% coverage of the dividend. That's the £350 million coming out of the life companies up to the holding companies. The working capital's in place to cover the one-off costs and any difference between the actual sustainable free surplus generation within the life companies and the £350 million we pay out. So just sort of kind of the different moving parts are there. And that working capital covers all those different elements.
Good question. Just listening to all the moving parts about the capital generation versus your usages. The bottom line is currently you effectively, it looks like it's about 1x covered, and you've made, you've pointed out that the VIF element reduces, but you say you're going to counter it via a higher new business component and the one-off costs coming off and cost savings coming through. But the bottom line is when I do all that modeling, I've got you, and I've got a dividend with this sort of trajectory, I've got you sort of covering your costs sort of 1.1, 1.2 times in the medium term. That contrasts with, companies like Aviva was like over 2x. What is your thinking in terms of dividend policy? In terms of what are you going to just keep it very thin at 1x coverage, or do you want to build up to 1.5? Do you want to build up two times over time. I'm just trying to understand the thinking there. I mean, you've removed the script and you're only one times covered. It seems strange.
Look, our policy is best summarised by looking at when we have said that the board would consider moving to a progressive dividend. Clearly, dividends are a decision that the board takes each time and never commits in advance. We've guided the market last summer, and I would say the same today, that the board would consider moving to a progressive dividend when the sustainable free surplus gets to 400 million. That against the cash cost of the dividend going forward, given that we've cancelled the scrip, will give you about a 1.33 times coverage. So if I just convert the 400 into a coverage, I get to about 1.3, which I feel is broadly appropriate for where we are today in terms of thinking about our dividend policy. If the policy changes, then of course we would share that with the market.
The only other observation I'd add to that is that cash generation is defined very differently in different companies. Our figures are post-tax, they're post-capital, they're post-debt interest, and the cash comes out in terms of hard dividends up the company, hard cash out, the life companies going up. Many of our competitors, their numbers aren't post-debt, they aren't post-capital, the dividends don't come out, it's free surplus, but it's not hard cash. So we're trying hard here to be really clean and crisp in our communication around cash generation and dividends coming out of the life companies, the holding companies, that then is the, there's the hard cash that can be used.
Yeah, there's no cross-funding with intercompany debt arrangements between ourselves and... Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks. It's Kevin Ryan at Investec. Could you add a little flesh to the bones of slide 15, where you're talking about the international target dividend profile? You've got FPI flatlining at 20 and Lombard growing. Could you just add a little to your assumptions behind those dividends you're going to take out of those businesses? Thanks.
The dividend profile is what we committed to a couple of years ago, and we have generally stuck by the targets that were committed to a couple of years ago. So don't take this as what we'll only ever get ever out of the international businesses. That's what was set out a couple of years ago. The focus within those businesses is their asset businesses. So what we're doing is building the strength of our propositions, building the strength of our distributor relationships, hence to grow the assets under management, and you can see that the evidence of that in our results today, and then improve the cost efficiency of the businesses as well to reduce costs. And obviously, in asset businesses, as you grow assets and reduce costs, your cash generation is going to grow. And I think that's it's well worth taking the time to go through the detailed disclosure we've done on international, because if you look at the core parts of the business, and we're dealing with the non-core areas, we've got those under control, they're being dealt with. The core areas, the sustainable free surplus is growing significantly. That is what you need to generate in order to pay the dividends over time.
Yeah, thank you. Ashik Musadi from JP Morgan. Just three questions. First of all, the dividend that you receive from your subsidiaries, it fluctuated a bit in 2011 versus 2012. It was 450 versus 250. I guess it's a timing difference. So can you explain what's happening there and what's a sustainable level? Second thing is the free surplus. The 300 million includes like a couple of one-offs, a positive 86 million, a negative 31 million. Are these recurring numbers or are these actually one-offs? And the third thing, in the corporate pension, you mentioned that you want to grow in a selective market, selective schemes. What do you mean by that? Can you elaborate on that? Thank you.
Yeah, shall I take the first couple of points? Actually, you're absolutely right. These are timing difference largely with the different dividend numbers coming up from the life companies up to the resolution holding companies. But for the avoidance of doubt, the ratio that we quote today of 117% just looks at the regular 350 of annual dividends. We took 100 million up in the summer of last year as an interim, and 250 has been declared by Friends Life Limited, the main trading company, as their dividend as part of year end. So that's purely timing differences. As far as the elements you quote on sustainable free surplus, yes, the numbers you show are right. Those are the different numbers for the different types of variances that we have in the number this year. They're broadly comparable in aggregate to that which we saw in 2011, although of course in 2012 they do reflect the drag from the sustainable free surplus hits of the international businesses, which thankfully were more than offset by some of the positives coming out of the UK and Heritage division, as I said.
If I just answer the question on corporate benefits. So the distinction here is between existing book and new schemes. In terms of the existing book, as a number two player with 18 billion of assets under management, our primary focus has been on that existing book because of auto enrolment. So what we find typical of the market as a whole, most of our existing schemes will have two or three different pension arrangements that they've built up over time. With different providers. Our focus has been on securing the auto-enrolment mandate from those existing clients. 60% have gone with us, about 20% have gone with Nest, the other 20% have either undecided or have gone with one of the other two schemes they typically have within their portfolio. So we're very, very pleased with that. And given our costs are largely fixed or scheme-related, we'll see significant volume growth coming in against a relatively fixed cost base. So most of our focus in 2012 was on that opportunity, given our scale that we already have. In terms of new schemes, we are playing in the market for new schemes. We are winning a number of new schemes in the marketplace, but we do apply a rigorous financial discipline. And what we saw, particularly in the second half of last year, and probably generally, I guess, players with less scale thought there's this big auto-enrolment opportunity. We need to go in at 15, 20 basis points in the market to try and win mandates. Our rigorous financial discipline will not allow us to participate on that basis. I'm not prepared to write business unless I'm confident it's going to deliver decent cash and returns to shareholders.
Morning, it's James Pearce from UBS. It looks like you're getting close to hitting your targets on funding new business, cost cutting, strain, all the rest of it, and yet the ROEV is still stuck in mid-single digits. And given the payout policy that you've got, it's hard to see how the embedded value is going to grow. And assuming there's some connection between embedded value and cash flow at some point, it's hard to see how cash flow grows and the dividend grows. I mean, what can you say to us about the ROEV target and where you want that to go? And what options are there open to you? Is there financial re-engineering you can do to accelerate the cash flow? Could you securitise the in-force? Could you radically improve the ROEV in some way that, you know, is not obvious at the moment? Thanks.
I'm very happy to start with that, and Tim, you might want to add to it. So ultimately, the ROEV will go up when value of new business goes up and when we don't have negative in-force variances. We've had negative in-force variances on the international side, including a lower value of new business that came through on the German business in particular. So going forward, ROEV is going to be higher as we get rid of the negatives on in-force, don't have loss-making new business in areas like Germany, and continue to drive the growth in profitable new business. Given the strength of our franchises, given how well we're set for the key strategic market trends, I'm confident of significant further profitable growth in new business and hence driving up in the medium term towards our 10% ROEV target. And I'm also confident, I mean, I understand embedded value is important to people and therefore we look at that and we focus on that. But what it's really all about is that the future cash generation from the new business we write is going to more than replace the fall off of the reducing in-force cash generation. You've seen the relatively slow in-force runoff of the UK and Heritage business that we've covered today. Our goal is to continue to reduce the investment in new business that's needed. We're making good progress on that, more to do. And for that, get more value of new business to drive greater cash flow in future years for cash tomorrow. And that's what ultimately will lead to a growing cash profile and hence a growing dividend.
Colin Simpson from Goldman Sachs. Just two questions, please. Small countries with large banking sectors might actually see some outflows this year, and in light of Lombard's domicile in Luxembourg, I just wonder whether you think it could be quite a tough year for that part of the business this year. Second question, on your FinRe, on your back book. International, I think, in-force surplus came down quite a bit. Is that a trend that will continue as more and more policies are written under FinRe-type arrangement?
Well, I'm actually going to ask either John or Matt, you can decide between you, to, in the front row here, to comment on the outlook for Lombard, and then Tim will pick up the second part.
Yeah, fine.
So we put a mic down the front. Executive of Lombard.
Thank you for the question.
that comment has come up quite a bit in the last few weeks, obviously on the back of what's happening in Cyprus. The Luxembourg situation is quite different. Its stability as a country, its stability economically and financially is quite strong. And also its borrowing position, so the debt it has to other countries, is also quite low. So from that perspective, I don't think that'll be a big factor. Like, clearly in Europe, continuing difficulty in the wider macro sector, Lombard has done quite well against that backdrop this year. And going forward, we remain confident that the investments we made in the business will continue to generate strong new business.
On the second part of your question, I don't expect FinRe to be a big driver, positive or negative, on the in-force surplus runoff of the international business. You've seen we've taken some provisions for FinRe repayment reserves in 2012, and that's now got us in line with the expected benefits that we expect from product charges as that book runs off going forward. So the amount of FinRe we actually take is pretty low.
Sorry, Andy Hughes, XM BNP Paribas. Thank you. A quick question on the corporate pensions, corporate benefits business. Obviously, that's a key growth driver for you guys. But when I look at the numbers from last year in terms of outflows, it looks like you lost 2.2 billion of assets, which looks about 15% of the opening asset base on corporate pensions. Obviously, last year was an exceptional year before RDR came in, and you've set aside 33 million for further movements this year. So could you just tell us how things are progressing so far this year? I mean, have the outflows slowed significantly? Because obviously 15% seems like a very high run rate for a growth asset business. Thank you.
So the points are very well made. So in terms of corporate benefits, I was very pleased with the level of inflows at 2.6 billion. Shows how strong our proposition is and how we can compete with the best in the external market. Disappointed with the level of outflows, and that was 80% of that was driven by initial commission business, in effectively a last round of commission before the retail distribution review came in at the end of the year. In terms of the position for this year, I'm actually going to hold and wait and see what it actually looks like at the half year. And the reason I say that is that a number of advisors were getting clients to lodge a letter with providers at the end of last year to say, I might consider moving the scheme. And it was kind of a future sales hook into the year ahead that the advisors were putting in place. And ultimately, we'll see what comes of that. But the way the regulations work, those actions need to be taken by the middle of this year, so by the end of June. So let's wait and see how this year plays through. Clearly, in putting our results together, we believe we're adequately provisioned.
Oliver Steele at Deutsche Bank. So I'm looking at the expected undiscounted cash flows coming off the UK and Heritage book, which actually don't drop away too sharply initially. But you've also talked quite a lot today about aiming to generate enough new business to reduce the reduction, level it out, and eventually grow that top-line cash flow. So I'm just wondering if you can give a bit more sort of insight into at what stage you expect the new business to be offsetting the reduction in the cash flow of the back book.
I mean, we haven't given specific guidance on that. As Tim's chart already showed, there's quite a lot of targets out there already, so I'm not planning to add to them today. What I would say is that we are confident that the strength of the franchises we've invested in and built give us the competitive advantage that we can succeed in doing that and in due course lead to overall growing levels of cash generation from the business.
Good morning, Sandra Queenies for Autonomous. Three questions. Just coming back on James Pierce's question about getting to the ROEV target. I mean, being frank, you need to reduce the amount of equity in the business, which I think was something you were attempting to do halfway through the last year before you were stopped by the FSA. Can you give us some sense as to whether the FSA's attitude is changing, and if allowed, and we note the Standard Life was allowed to do a special dividend, would you go back to that proposition? Second question, on the sort of alphabet soup of targets, and I see SFS as taken over from DCT, under the DCT, the contribution from the overseas businesses was the cash dividends that they were going to bring back, i.e. 50 million. Under the SFS, you're looking at the underlying free surplus generation. Would you hope and anticipate that the SFS from the overseas businesses would be higher than that over the target period? And then the third question, in your in-force runoff, I think you're using a sensitivity, I think your equity return assumption is a massive 4.9% return per annum. Could you give us a sensitivity, 1% either way to that?
Mm-hmm. So Tim will pick up the third, I'll pick up the first two. In terms of special dividends and so on and so forth, to that question, our focus is on an organic strategy going forward, and our primary focus is on sustaining the 300 million dividend and moving that to a progressive dividend in due course. So I wouldn't rule out one-off capital returns necessarily in the future, but our primary focus is on making the current dividend confidently sustainable, which we believe it is, and then in due course moving to the progressive dividend as we've already indicated. In terms of your second question, as I said before, the dividend targets for international were set out a couple of years ago. Of course, our aspiration over time will be to grow the sustainable free surplus to greater levels than that, and therefore be able to consider potentially greater dividends from the international businesses in due course. But the targets remain as were set out 2 years ago. We'll pick up the third.
Okay.
Yeah. On the third part of your question, yes, in time, of course we would like to have the underlying international businesses generating an SFS greater than their level of dividend, and that would give us, you know, confidence that their dividend flows back to the UK would indeed be sustainable. So that's absolutely what we want to do, and you're absolutely right in your understanding of how the dividends flow into DCT, but it's the day-to-day performance of the international businesses that flow through into SFS. In terms of the in-force runoff and a sensitivity either way on equities, I haven't got those numbers at the top of my head, tip of my tongue, Andrew, but you'd have to be thinking of taking the IFRS in-force benefit that we have and understand that 60% of that is coming from the unit-linked aspects of the balance sheet, so it's not just purely equities, but mainly, then you'd have to then think about a level of gearing of the fixed cost base that we would have relative to servicing that. So if you're in a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 type ratio, you'd probably be in the right ballpark.
Thanks, Alan Devlin at Barclays. Three questions. First of all, on the asset management, you had AUM of 11 billion at the end of 2012, and expect to go to 18 billion next year. What profit margins can we expect from that business? And I presume that is 100% cash. Second question on capital actions on the Heritage business. You released 101 million from moving from 5 funds to 4 funds. Now, how much can we expect when you go from 4 funds to 2? And is there any other actions you can take to accelerate the release of capital from the back book? And then just the final question on annuities. You mentioned you're losing 50% of your annuities to enhanced annuities, and your pilot scheme, you've increased your attention rate to 60%. Can you talk about the opportunities there and how long it'll take to roll out the annuity business? Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to get all those here.
Yep, 3-0 to you.
So on asset management, you'll see in the numbers that we in 2012 we spent something like 6 million, I think it was, in setup costs for Friends Life Investments, and that the trading performance in the year was broadly zero, if you like, in terms of profits. But obviously, you've only got the assets for a small part of the year against the full running costs. So as we get a full year, and as we then get more assets coming in to Friends Life Investments, we'd expect the profits to gear up on the back of that. We also see elsewhere in the numbers quite a significant embedded value profit gain, I think about £11 million that's emerged as a result of the embedded value benefit of saving the VAT in particular and the ongoing cost of running that. On the capital allocation side and then the capital optimization side on Heritage, so it is our intent to look to move from 4 life companies to 2. We're not giving any specific guidance on the benefits that will yield. All I would say is, well, I think I'd say two things. First of all, you know, generally in these areas, you pick off the lower hanging fruit first. So don't think last year we got rid of one life company and generated 100. Next year we get rid of two, that'll be 200. That wouldn't be a sensible conclusion to draw. Equally, there are a whole host of different initiatives that Jonathan and his team are looking at, and we believe that there is significant value to be gained for shareholders by having a disciplined and rigorous management of those in-force assets and looking to turn that embedded value into cash over time. Third one was the annuity question. So as I say, in the pilot we had with our enhanced annuity with vesting pension customers, we were getting over 60% retention rates in the pilot. So generally our approach on annuities is to take a considered and sensible approach to it, not to go running headlong to get massive volume increases overnight, but we are confident of further good progress in both volumes and profits in 2013.
Back safely. Thank you.